Hey, have you ever watched the League of Legends anime or seen the Imagine Dragons songs or seen this like virtual band called KDA? A lot of that stuff came from the leadership of one man within Riot Games. And we talked to him today in the audio space. Toa is a legend. I think the first meeting I had with him out of the blue, we were meaning to catch up for years. And after he announced he was leaving Riot, him and I talked for maybe an hour and a half. And I said, we should probably do this as an audio space. I want to learn more about you. Let's chat again. And this is exactly what we did in this space. So this was a really enthralling discussion for me. I think the viewership on LinkedIn wasn't as high as some of the others because I think maybe we waffle a little bit, maybe we just talk on, but damn, I really loved this conversation. So if I loved it, hopefully some other people will too. Enjoy. How are you?
Doing all right. A little bit of a change on my audio setup, but does it sound okay on your end?
Yeah, man. Sounds good. Sounds better than when we last talked.
Awesome. Perfect.
Beautiful. Man, I went to watch Post Malone and Red Hot Chili Peppers last night at Marvel Stadium. Very good.
Nice.
Did not think, I mean, you're a music guy. I'm just so confused. Why was Post Malone opening for Red Hot Chili Peppers?
I know, right? But like that's kind of what's great about like music altogether. Like I've seen that and noticed that recently. There's just kind of Post Malone. He's definitely like flexible. Like that, like he could perform with country singers. He can perform like across the board with different genres. I think that's what's really he's actually a very talented guy.
Yeah, dude, so much passion as well, like in his singing and stuff. I enjoyed a lot of his stuff more than the Red Hot Chili Peppers set that they did.
Nice.
Like, nice. Yeah, man, really, really good. Also, there was a random. Like I told my fiance, I was like, this is like a DLC. He brought on Angus Stone to play guitar for one of his games, and they sang Big Jet Plane together. And I was like, what the hell's going on?
Just all, yeah. Those are great, though. I'd love it when there's like surprises and it's just like a different experience than you probably would normally think.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome.
Like, you're going to remember that. You're like Post Malone and Red Hot Chili Peppers. Like, that's a very unique, special moment.
Yeah, it's cool seeing the age range in the audience, too. You know, like there was like an 8-year-old boy sitting next to me with his dad. And then obviously you see like, you know, 50, 60-year-old people around who are the same age as the actual people on stage singing. So that's pretty cool.
That's great.
Yeah, man. So what's been the latest with you? What have you been up to recently?
I mean, you know, with me, I'm kind of in that, you know, that new kind of transitional period for myself. But I mean, I've really spent a good amount of time kind of just traveling. I was in New Zealand for a month and a lot of time to reflect and just kind of really, really thinking about what's going on now and, you know, what do I want my journey to be for the next, you know, kind of like 10 years or whatnot. And so, yeah, that's what I've been spending. I've been a lot of time kind of in my head and then just like really thinking and learning. Like I'm kind of like a sponge right now. I'm just absorbing so much right now, which is actually, it's just fun. I'm having a blast.
Like back to learning mode or something. Is that what you'd say?
Yeah, back to learning mode, right? Like there's so much to learn about right now and think about and you can kind of, it's one of those like absorb what you know now and then kind of think about like, well, what does this mean for the future? How does this evolve? And I think it's a fun exercise, especially now. I think there's a lot of people thinking like that and more now than ever, I think you're kind of almost able to act on that now too.
It sounds like the fun and calm version of a midlife crisis.
Is that right? You know what? You may be right. You may be absolutely right. Like, this is my version. Like, I'm not going to try to go and get a really cool fancy car. Like, I'm doing this.
You know, the weirdest stories I have is I'm sure I had a quarter life crisis. And I remember specifically how it happened. So I was working at Corsair and, you know, esports was starting to grow. This was around 2018 kind of time. And I was doing, I went up for a holiday up in sunny Queensland to go see my family. And I was doing yoga at the beach while listening to Pink Floyd.
Wow.
And I kind of had an epiphany and I was umming and ahhing about whether I should like quit my job and go into doing consulting and, you know, try to make something of myself, you know, working for myself. And yeah, I kind of had a quarter life crisis in that moment while doing yoga on the beach, listening to Pink Floyd, decided to quit my job, bought like a bobber style motorbike, like an old Honda motorbike, which was so anxiety riddling because it just would break all the time. So you're riding just thinking like, am I actually going to die because a wheel falls off? And
that's part of the experience.
Quit my job. Yeah. So it can happen. That's and great. I think I was about 25. So I call that a quarter life crisis. You know, I got a bit to go before my midlife crisis.
Yeah. I think a lot of us do. There's definitely not just a midlife crisis. There's multiple phases and times to have that. So that makes sense. I think 25 is like, I think that is a good, like, I don't know. It's like, am I trying to be, and do I want to be an adult, and how do I do that? I feel like that's kind of like a phase people hit about that time.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me, man. And I was able to, you know, was able to have a pretty good gig at Corsair. I think I posted, for those people who follow my content, I posted recently, and they can probably guess, you know, how much wages I got paid at which company, because I talked about it in a rough sense. And I wasn't on a crazy amount of money, but I was able to work from home. I was able to have good benefits. I was able to get a lot of bonuses because the company was doing well. So I was, you know, comfortable in the fact that I could leave and, you know, have a good shot at it. You know, that was around that time. I think it's about that time in your life when you start getting into, like, you know, how to invest in your 401k and how you should save money and that kind of stuff, right? You start to age out of spending all your money on drinks at the club and trying to chase girls. And, you know, I had a long-term girlfriend anyway, so it was good to go.
No doubt.
You've got to set yourself up for success.
As we all try, man.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, you and I already talked a bit about this, but we've obviously got to rehash it again. The easiest way to ask it is, how the hell do you go from banking to making music at a video game publisher? Can you talk through, like, just some of the dot point steps?
Yeah, and I would love to say that it was, like, predetermined, or, you know, I kind of strategically aimed to do it, but, like, it is one of those where, you know, I kind of ended up there in a really cool way. So, I mean, you know, to kind of back up, you know, I went to USC here in Los Angeles, so I'm a Trojan at heart, Trojan forever. And so, you know, I was always passionate about music, classically trained, you know, played the saxophone and whatnot. And then when I graduated, I was studying econ and finance. And so when I graduated, I was a securities trader, institutional securities trader. So in fixed income, so working on the trading desk. And I did that for a good amount of years. And that was just kind of my pursuit of, you know, my career. But at the same time, I was kind of living this, you know, in a fun way, like this double life where I was still DJing and producing music and working with, like, an independent label out here, and kind of doing showcase DJing. And so I was a trader by day and, like, a DJ by night, right? And so at the same time, like, I always loved games. Now, I wasn't what you'd probably call, what some people maybe thought of as, a hardcore gamer. I played consoles. So I was mostly PlayStation, right? So I played a ton of Street Fighter. Also played a lot of, like, you know, everything from Madden and a lot of sports games. But I fell into League really early. And part of that is I'm also good personal friends with, you know, the founders themselves. We went to school at SC together. And so I knew them from prior. And in hanging out with one of them at one point, and I got introduced into League super early, and it was competitive, right? So that's the thing about me, is I'm pretty competitive. I played sports growing up. I was on the track team at USC, and I caught the League of Legends bug really, really early, and then eventually ended up working with Riot, where I kind of came in to Riot, and it was like, hey, let's try something. Like, what would music be here at this game company? And at that time, you know, it was really just kind of an experiment. There was no real defined strategy in what we were trying to accomplish. And to back it up a little bit too, is my experience with the co-founders, and specifically back at SC, was we had a radio show. So music was, like, our thing back in college. And so we were kind of revisiting that and really thinking about that with League of Legends. So I basically said, you know what? And I guess that's that, like, you know, like we were just talking about, that was that quarter life crisis, where I was like, do I want to keep pursuing, you know, kind of institutional trading and going up the kind of that ladder? It was fun and was challenging, right? But I had just experienced not too long before that, you know, the financial crisis, basically. Like, I was right front row seats of 2008, 2009. And so I was in that kind of spot of like, well, what do I really want to do? And this seemed fun. You know, I loved video games and I loved music. So I jumped ship without any real idea of what it was going to be like after 6 months. But we kind of experimented a lot. And the real guiding light for us was really, it wasn't about making video game music. It was really more about, how do we make good music? And so in that, we tried a lot of things. And you know, it led to everything from, you know, how do we make music for our new champions as they're going to be released? We used to have kind of these, you know, more orchestral background soundtracks, and we still do. And we tend to, but it was like, for some of them, we wanted to make like a really cool modern production, you know, like a modern song for some of them. And our first one was really for Lucian, was this kind of, you know, really cool double gunslinger, Templar, right? And so we kept thinking of like electronic music, and Crystal Method was one of them that kept coming to mind. And then we're just like, maybe we should just reach out to them and see if they'd work with us. And they did, and they were dope, really cool guys. And from there it led to creating, you know, anthems for our esports, you know, because that was blowing up and getting big, and doing live performances, you know, at the Staples Center, and, you know, bringing a bunch of different artists together to perform live there and have a song, and then creating, you know, music videos. And then that led into things like turning characters from League of Legends into kind of modern day pop stars, and building fandom for them, leaning into the music that we loved. And so, yeah, it just kept growing. And at first it was like a lot of experimenting. And then once we kind of learned what this was, and it became kind of a, you know, a capability of ours, a strength of ours, like, you know, we just had this real passionate team. We started, you know, doing bigger things and kind of adding strategy to that. But yeah, so a very long-winded way of saying, like, not that I just ended up there, but it was just, you know, I was doing what I was good at and learned to do, which was kind of, you know, analytical stuff and trading. But then I got a chance and the opportunity to jump ship and marry that with my passion. And then, you know, my type of role didn't exist before. I never knew what to call myself. But we knew what we were trying to do somewhat, I guess, to an extent. And yeah, that's how I ended up here. And it's been an amazing journey, because it went from everybody scratching their head to like, what are you doing? Including my mom. Right? My mom was just like, you're going to do what? And I was like, yeah, there's this video game company that a friend started, and I'm going to do music. She's like, okay, like, you went to SC, like, you're gonna, but, you know, she supported me at first. And the funny thing was, is the turnaround was, you know, you fast forward, it was a few years, and then she goes down to like a family reunion, and like all the little cousins are like, hey, I heard uncle works at, you know, Riot, and they start talking about League of Legends. And she was like, are you famous or something? Like, how do all the little cousins know who you are? Because they all played League of Legends. And I think it was at that point my mom finally got it. So yeah, that's how I ended up here.
Dude, it's the little cousins and like the, you know, the second cousins and the nieces and nephews and stuff that really drive that thing home. Like, I feel like we get so stuck in the work in front of us and our own industry. And then, you know, like I'll be with some extended family, or with like, I was like with a mentor of mine, and he tells like the kids that we were with, we took a bunch of like his kids and his friends' kids to go see the cricket together and go see Fortress, which is a massive facility here. And he's like, Andrew's just like, hey, kids, do you know that Chris knows Loserfruit? And they all just go fucking nuts. They're like, you know Loserfruit? Yeah. She's in Fortnite. Can you tell her I said hi? I'm like, okay, sure. You know what I mean? Like, they just go absolutely insane. It's like, yep, you tell them, like, you know God or something, you know? Like,
yeah. That's funny. They're the true validators. So.
Yes. Yeah. 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 What did you DJ?
Oh, man, everything. So, I mean, when I started, because again, I was a musician, and I was really in love with jazz for a long time. I started the early, like in junior highs when I really fell in love with jazz and was playing it a lot. So when I got into DJing, I was a scratch nerd, so a turntablist. I didn't know how to mix and things like that until within college, when people were like, hey, you should DJ a party. And I was like, I just have these weird sounding records that don't sound like music. But I play it like an instrument, but I learned. And so I started off kind of just your typical, you know, hip hop, and especially because that was big. And then I really got into, I loved kind of experimental stuff. There was a really interesting phase, like, you know, when, you know, early 2000s, a lot of genres were starting to really collide, you know, even with like the Little John sound. And there's, you know, everything from like when electronic was starting to hit hip hop. And then there's just like a lot of underground kind of genres. I was really into underground hip hop here from LA, you know, from Project Load. And in fact, I spent my full, you know, my first credit card I ever got. I just went to the record store and I talked. There was a DJ there who I idolized. His name was DJ Retmatic. And I just pretty much gave him my credit card. And I was like, can you hook me up with like the dopest LA underground, music because I have to DJ at this kind of event at school at SC. And so I spent my whole credit card on just DJs on records like that. But I did a lot of stuff, and it got really experimental for a while, which was fun, and performing because I was kind of a showcase DJ. So it was really kind of with bands and artists and doing all types of weird stuff, but kind of was grounded in hip hop initially.
Yeah, damn, man. Something so special about hip hop DJing. I'm a big NWA fan. So, you know, it's a bit rooted in that too, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And battle DJ.
So would you say like, the creation of Riot Music was someone's idea, or is it something that just sort of happened? Like, what's the catalyst for something like that? You kind of just said, yeah, I just started, but how does that conversation work?
I think it was, I can't say it was a specific idea. It was really something that grew, right? Like, you know, we started and there was just three of us really. And then we worked with directly with, you know, the co-founders at that time. They were very, you know, Riot was a much smaller company at that time. And so we'd have weekly, if not almost every other day, meetings with the guys, and they were personal friends. And it was just really, it was idea after idea of things to do. And then, you know, we also, it was hard for us to really talk about like what exactly we were trying to do, because, you know, many people say, oh, you're starting a label. And it wasn't really that, because we weren't trying to sign artists, right? We did some things that labels do, but we weren't exactly a label, right? We weren't a music publisher, but we did all the things of like many that kind of like mirrored a lot of kind of different industry business models. And so, it was just something that grew. It was like every year we'd get like another idea that, and we'd grow on it. And it was like, all right, how can we do this, you know, with esports? And then, you know, it was the opening ceremonies. And then it's like, wow, how can we make this even bigger, right? We were always kind of thinking bigger and better to an extent, but really staying true to the music had to be good, right? And there was this one thing I loved with, you know, at Riot is how we thought about creative, and like everything was really thoughtful. And there was a lot of intent behind the decision making we had, like every creative decision, every strategic, like there was, it was very thoughtful. And I think that led to a lot of the success for us. Like, I think our players, whether they knew it or not, kind of felt or heard that creative or whatever, that intention in what we did. And so, yeah, it was just like, it continued to be a growing idea. So, but we never knew from the get-go, like, this is exactly what we're trying to do. It was more led by what if we did this, and then where are we going to go from there?
What was the, like, what would you say is the big breakout of music? For me, I feel like it's got to be Imagine Dragons, or is there something that I'm missing?
I mean, yeah, that was definitely our first really big, I mean, that was, you know, 2014, and, you know, Imagine Dragons, they actually played League of Legends. We found out through some, like, friends and other folks and a connection, and which was really cool. And so that was probably, like, one of our first big, big breakout things, right? That was a special moment because you had, you know, Imagine Dragons, who for some, they were just more of, they were kind of like the Radioactive guys back then. You know, they had that big hit, Radioactive, and that's what just people knew them by. They didn't have their second album yet. But for us, it was like, they were just these really fun, cool dudes that loved to play League. They were on tour and they would click into Wi-Fi and they would play League of Legends, like in the green room. And then sometimes they were late on the stage because they were playing League, and they would play League until they like pretty much pulled Wi-Fi from them, right? So these were like, they were just like us to an extent, like they loved League like us. And so meeting them and, you know, talking about gaming and League of Legends, it wasn't like it was foreign to them, right? Like they were artists that just got it. And so when it got down to creative and like what this event was about, they already knew. And so that was a big moment for us. And then, you know, we had multiple moments, which was great. Like, you know, we've worked with Zed, we've worked with, you know, G Idol, and we've worked with all types of artists across the board and multiple genres. You know, Danny Lohner, who I think just got on the Hall of Fame for, you know, or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and whatnot because of Nine Inch Nails. But nice. Yeah, there was multiple moments, but that Imagine Dragons 2014 was definitely like one of our first big ones.
Yeah, because obviously I'm like a numbers guy as well. While you're talking, I'm just bringing up various things on my Spotify, my YouTube, et cetera. And not to be understated, because you're pretty, you know, I'd say you're a pretty humble guy for what you've done. And for those people listening, the Imagine Dragons Warriors Worlds 2014 theme song here on YouTube alone has 392 million views and 3.4 million likes. So I think it is a pretty big breakout. I think it went pretty well.
Yeah. And what's amazing is like the growth of it, right? So if you look at, you know, I mean, you could go and look at, for example, like KDA Pop Stars, right? I think that's, I mean, I don't really track it, but it's
542 right now. Yeah, 542 on YouTube. And sorry, just a sec, because I have it up here, 291 and a half million on Spotify as well. So together, you're like getting close to a billion views.
Yeah, just on those ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's been a cool growth trajectory just like on that. And you know, it's one of those like we're niche to an extent, but it's a very big niche and a very active and just great fan base to be a part of.
What about like working with the labels as part of this? Do they like, were they easy to convince? Cause you're like, hey, you know, we're literally one of the biggest video games in the entire world. You know, we've got millions of fans. And you're going to expose yourself to a new audience. It kind of sounds like I'm pitching you an esports team sponsorship when I'm using these points. But yeah, it's just interesting because I mean, you know, I've been a music fan all my life, as a lot of other people are. But all I ever see publicly is that people just hate the labels. So it'd be really interesting to hear from your side, like what it was like working with them as a non-traditional method.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like it's been interesting the kind of over time that like kind of evolution. I'd say in the very beginning, I think they were definitely confused. They didn't know how to work with us. You know, they were kind of, you know, I remember being in a meeting, you know, we had this one called epic meeting that many of us kind of go back to. It was one of our first ones. And, you know, you got some of the big name execs in there in the music industry. And we were talking about this opportunity, you know, and you just got to remember, like, they don't come from the culture of gaming. They're not deep in it. And so it's kind of having to walk them through because we're talking about our big esports event, right? Which they're like, what is an esports event? Right? Like we never heard of it because, you know, 90% of the world hadn't heard about it. Like you either played games and knew about it or you didn't, right? Especially back then. And so, you know, it confused them for a while where they're like, wait, so a bunch of people show up to an event and they pull out their laptops and they all play games together. That's what the big event is. And we're like, no, they're all showing up just like you think in traditional sports. They're all going to sit and watch final two teams play on stage. And they're just like, oh, I just can't imagine that. Right. And so, I mean, we had these similar conversations with venues, for example, right. Cause they were like, really, is this going to sell out? Is this, you know, and of course we ended up selling those places out and stuff like that, which was dope. But yeah, and then you kind of fast forward and I think it's the conversation's a lot different with labels now. Like I think many of them really want to be a part of it, right? And many of them who have been a part of it understand it to an extent of like they're actively trying to find ways to be a part of it and things like that. And so now everyone's experience can be different, but like when you want to work with some of those amazing big artists who are part of, you know, if they're signed to a label and whatnot, you know, it's really about building great, solid relationships with them and ideally being able to create something special together with them. And that's all parties, right? Like whether it's, you know, songwriters and publishers and artists and labels and just anybody, quite frankly. So, but it's changed over time. I think they understand it a bit more. I still think our world is a little foreign to most anybody who's not just a part of it, like how it works and things like that. So it's definitely been a journey, a learning journey for kind of both parties to an extent. But it's for the most part, it's like, you know, it's you've got two parties that just need to kind of work together who have maybe have different goals and things like that. So it's really about developing a strong partnership with them.
Yeah, two, and I guess from the outside, like two catalysts for that as a whole with, you know, bringing that commercial interest in general has to be League of Legends and Fortnite. Fortnite on the brand side, and then obviously you guys with the, you know, with the music side, and I would say the sponsorship side for esports. You know, that's kind of like the triple threat pioneer. Because I'm sure Fortnite would have had the same discussions, right? Like at the start with Travis Scott, his management would have been like, "You want to do what? Like an in-game concert where you make me a giant and I walk through the fields? What the hell's that about?" But now, you know, there's just. I mean, there's everything in there. You can play Star Wars versus Marvel, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's becoming like Super Smash Brothers in a way, which is what I think made Smash so exciting to me as a kid. It was like, damn, I can play like Link versus Pikachu. Like, this is amazing. Versus Kirby and Yoshi, like all in one, you know, all in one battlefield. It's so cool. It seems to make sense to me. And then I guess like once again from the outside, like the transition for you guys is you kind of started with working with big name artists or at least medium name artists, whatever you would call them, to make songs with them, right? But then you pretty much transitioned into your own label by making KDA from the ground up and making essentially a K-pop group by yourself, right?
Yeah, to an extent, right? Like, yeah, we worked with a bunch of different artists of different sizes and scopes for many years. And then the KDA and the virtual, well, the funny thing is like our first virtual artist technically is Pentakill. Right. And they launched in, was it 2014, 2015? Right. And back then that was just, all that was a passion project. So by the music team, I mean, it was, you know, like a composer, two sound designers and a lead tech ops guy who was the drummer, all at Riot. Right. And it's like, loved metal. And Pentakill actually as champions in a skin line, already existed in the game itself. And it was kind of this very like, you know, there's five champions and they had this very metal thematic and they were kind of like this band, but it was just very, you know, kind of fantasy and, you know, it was just a skin line. But there were many, many players that like really dug metal and you would see them, you know, cosplay it and they were doing like these mock performances of stuff. And so, you know, we kind of turned around like, well, what if the band did exist? What would that be like? And our North Star was like, well, imagine if they were kind of like a Gorillaz, right? Like they were a band and it wasn't us who's the band, right? The individuals here. And so, yeah, so the team on the weekends basically made an album. And then we reached out with, you know, to a few artists and that's how we kind of created Pentakill and put them out there. It's like, hey, this is Pentakill. Here's a single, made a website and then album coming in 1 or 2 weeks, something like that. And so that's, and with that one though, was interesting is that's how we learned how to do music distribution. Cause we were just putting things on SoundCloud before, just kind of sliding them out there. So, cause our fans were players and YouTube, they were kind of like, oh man, how do we get, you know, we want to listen to the songs. And so we would just put it on SoundCloud and YouTube back in the day. But then we wanted to call up Apple and we're like, how do we get it on, you know, on iTunes? And this is a little bit before Spotify was really a thing, big thing, but you know, we ended up, you know, getting the album on Apple and whatnot. And so that grew our, like, you know, that started our kind of distribution of our music officially to an extent. And so it was like every project, because we wanted to scope it out and get bigger and better, we grew our capabilities and we started to look like a label. And so, yeah, once we got into, and then KDA was like probably the first official release of a new artist, so to speak. And yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, we're technically the artist and the label, you know, in that sense. And there were, you know, as well as the songwriters, both who we collaborated with and our internal songwriters and you know, Riot being kind of the music publisher at the same time. And then you have Esports, which is our best, you know, is basically our brother next to us and can perform at this big event and debut them in front of, you know, 100 million people. But all that's within that, you know, was within that ecosystem. And I think that's what's great about kind of gaming and esports and things like that. There's this really big, thriving ecosystem, so to speak. And so, yeah, we kind of looked like a label from the outside and whatnot, which enabled us to do something as big and kind of courageous as KDA. Yeah.
I mean, KDA went platinum as well, right, with pop stars. What's the reaction from the other labels? Like, do they have you on their radar at all? Like, I assume not because, you know, you guys are, I don't know, do they see you as a one-hit wonder? I don't even know how to ask the question. I'm sure they just see the charts and they go, what the hell's going on? Who the hell is Riot Games?
Yeah, definitely, especially in the early days, raised a few eyebrows where people reaching out, you know, who are we and why are we showing up on these charts, right, in different ways, like going, you know, number one digital sales and things like that. And so that, I think that was always interesting. I can't speak for them and whatnot, but I'm sure they were curious on where we came from and stuff like that. And once we started showing up on, you know, once you start showing up on stuff like that, you know, you start to gain more interest and, you know, and stuff like that. So that, I think that was part of the evolution too of interest in gaming altogether, like video gaming, esports and gaming, you know, started to become more known to kind of the masses, right? And so you just saw all of that starting to kind of come together and collide over the past few years.
Is there some psychology to making the song titles in capital letters as well? It's just one thing I noticed about KDA and a lot of other artists. It's always interested me.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like, hey, everything has to be in capitals, so to speak. And I think it even depends, right? Like we were kind of, it stands out, right, to an extent. But KDA for us, there's like a lot of stuff that's in there, right? Like KDA for people who play League and play Gaming, obviously they know like kind of what KDA stands for, which is, you know, kills and deaths and assists, right? And we just, you know, that was really interesting. And Pop Stars, we just kind of kept that thematic with KDA specifically from a brand perspective. But a lot of our anthems, world anthems and things like that, you know, of course, there's probably a little bit closer to the normal look and style of, you know, what we're naming things and stuff like that. But yeah.
Hmm. Hey, for those people in the audience too, if you want to come up and ask a question, we'll open the floor soon as well. So you can just raise your hand in the audio thing and we can start bringing you up because we've got about 30 minutes left to chat. Otherwise, Tom and I will talk forever.
Yeah. Don't let me bore you and especially TED Talk. I tend to do that. So.
Oh, of course not, man. You know, an interesting thing that I really want to know as well is what were your KPIs inside Riot? Surely you had something to like attach your performance or something to like what's the business that drives the cool work that you're doing?
I mean, I probably can't speak too much to like the very, very specifics, but I mean, you know, it really depends on, you know, project by project, quite frankly, and like what you're trying to accomplish and things like that. But obviously looking for things of impact, KPIs that really build into, you know, impact at times. There's business KPIs too. And it really depends on the team and what they're, you know, the KPIs of the specific teams. Because often with the projects that we did, you know, that we worked on, there's multiple teams involved, right? So there's kind of multiple KPIs, some that belong to some teams and some to other teams. So it just really depended, you know, like for example, right? Like what esports is trying to achieve probably looks much different, right? Especially if you're like from broadcast and stuff and you care about viewership and things like that, right? Versus maybe what the product teams are really trying to, you know, what the skins and things like that, you know, the KPIs are going to look different for them versus the music team, right, as well. And so that's always like a, you know, a big collaborative effort, right? Is like, how do you build in those KPIs to work together and help each other out? So,
yeah, I mean, a theme to attach to is something you mentioned briefly before, right? Which is like our job was just to make good music and everything else will come, right, with that.
To an extent. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little more than just make good music. I mean, I think that was like our minimum, if that makes sense. Like we didn't want to ship anything if we weren't incredibly in love with the music. Like that's, you know, the craft and quality was very, very important for it. And I think always will be, you know, to an extent. But there's other things that we often need. And again, dependent on the project, but that's like the minimum required for us is like, hey, this can't even ship unless like the music is good. Like we're not in the business of like, you know, not trying to be a volume based business, right? Where it's like, man, get as much music out there. Like that wasn't what we were trying to do. We believed in good music. So our strategy kind of reflected that.
And you guys change between genres quite a lot too, right? Like, you know, Pentakill is like a metal band. Imagine Dragons, I don't even know what category they're in. And then you went to K-pop, you know, with KDA and then to other types of music. I find that interesting too. Is that you understanding like what your audience wants to hear? Is that just like some sort of natural progression? I'm interested in understanding the process of that too.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of both, right? There's kind of, you know, how can you be, you know, somewhat data informed, right? No, like, you know, like you said, know your audience and things like that. But also with us, we wanted to do things that we also were very passionate about. And so it can really come from either side first, right? Like you can look at data and be like, oh, okay, this is what the audience like, and that could help instruct what you do. Also, you could say like, this is what we're really passionate about. And then ideally, if you're triangulating with, you know, the information and data, that's always great and stuff. But some of the stuff we didn't, in the earlier days, we didn't have that data If in fact we got some of the data through some of our executions, and then of course doing things like surveys, of course, to learn more and more. And so it is definitely a blend of both. Like, to me, that is like what I loved is we were pretty much all the music we were chasing down was, you know, and that's more of like, I look for that when, if we're going to do like music, you know, for example, like if we're going to get into K-pop, for me, it's really important to like, well, who are the people that are really fanatical to an extent about K-pop, who understand it, who love it, who are passionate about it and really want to drive and want to hold it to a bar to an extent. Like, I think that's necessary, because if you just have a team that's not into the music, I think it's hard to make good music and something that, you know, they're not passionate about. And so I think we gravitated towards that a lot. I know I do. And I look for that. And so it KDA was just interesting because it's, you know, when I was kind of walking around with this and pitching and chatting with folks, and it was really cool to see the number of people that are like, hey, by the way, like, I really like K-pop. And then we just drive down, like we would go in these rabbit holes of sharing music and talking about what we liked. And like, it's like when you see that and are part of that, like it creates an amount of energy within the team. And that's kind of what KDA was. It was just like this big ball of energy within Riot. And even then though, it's like, you still don't know if players are going to like it, but many of us within Riot loved it already. And it wasn't even out yet. We were just so excited about it. We just thought it was so fun and just like a great expression. And so it was validating to see it received in the way that it was, because that it was just a big ball, like I said, ball of energy within Riot. And I think that reflected in the work we did. And then it was great to see it reflected and received that way too. So by the players.
Did you have to like switch team members around or something? Because the thing that's so confusing to me is like, did the same people generate essentially a metal album that generated a K-pop album internally? Because that seems almost crazy from the outside.
I mean, yeah. So our team, it's not that we switched. I mean, you know, for example, who's doing the songwriting? Like, right, it's usually going to be like, if it's a composer or producer that is specifically like that, that's their thing. Like we had a group of people, and many, you know, some were like really big into, you know, highly talented and kind of orchestral and things like that. And actually most of them are, many of them, you know, especially when like composers often come for that, but you know, many of them have other preferences and love for that, like what they're doing on the weekends or whatnot. And so you get this interesting group where there is kind of like a group of people that love, you know, orchestral and metal, of course, and orchestral and, you know, hip hop and pop and things like that. And so, yeah, we had this hodgepodge of a team over there, which is really cool, who all love different, like they're unique and different in their own ways. And when we collaborate together, you can create some special stuff. So yeah, we didn't have to like switch people up in the team. It was just kind of, there was a music team, which had a group of people, and wasn't an incredibly large team by any means. It wasn't. And so which is still to this day, I think is pretty amazing on just how like, the size of that team, but like what the team was able to do over these years. And we grew, but it was never like super big and stuff. So it's, you know, it's also cool to be able to work on genres of music that you may have never worked on before too. And so that's, I think kind of, that was a fun part of it.
What do you think is next for Riot? Like, did you set up a plan before you left, or are they just going off on their own? It's just so interesting to see where it's taken now.
I mean, yeah, their future is really, that's it. That's, you know, future of Riot's in the hands of Riot. And so, I mean, you know, I here's the thing. The team is amazing. I still have a lot of confidence in them and what they're going to do. Right. Like if anything, I get to be a fan now. There'll probably be less stress on, you know, on my end now. I get to just kind of sit back and enjoy and jump around and things like that. So I'm still excited about their future. Quite frankly, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of opportunity, a lot of things out there, you know, things that I'm excited about, was excited about. And, you know, I expect things to kind of change and shift and stuff like that. It's not like it's not like I was like, hey, here's what you have to do for the next X amount of years. No, it's, you know, I think that team is going to do some exciting things in the future. So I get to sit back and listen now.
Less stress is always helpful.
Yep.
Gonna be, I mean, we've done pop, we've done like rock, we've done metal,
We've done K-pop. What's next? A country album. A League of Legends country
bluegrass,
album.
Bluegrass. There was it was constantly something that was brought up. I was like, what about bluegrass?
So, really?
Who knows? Who knows?
Damn. It was funny, actually. I was thinking before, too, there's some weird correlation between heavy metal music and gaming, isn't there? Like, I've seen World of Tanks did some stuff in that region. Like, quite a few other publishers have. There was that metal – years ago, there was some metal festival in Germany that had an ESL activation for esports added as well.
I mean, I think, yeah, especially when, you know, kind of like battle games and metal. Like, I think, you know, rock, like there's – whether it's competition, there's, you know, there's that energy, and I think metal can often align with it very, very well, you know. And even was interesting is like when we did Pentakill, right? And Pentakill is kind of like, you know, the power metal and things like that. There's kind of a, especially with this last album, there's a bit more range and kind of the types of metal, the subgenres, so to speak, of metal that it's in. But we found that it was a good, interesting amount of people who wouldn't call themselves metalheads, but they actually enjoyed the music, right? I think especially from an esports perspective and competition, like it feels right for many of the things. So yeah, I agree. Is like, I think metal works really well. You know, obviously electronic music works really well, stuff like that. So yeah, I agree.
I think in our last chat too, like changing tacks a little bit, in our last chat, I told you that if Blizzard doesn't implement your strategy or try to hire you, I think they're insane. But I'm interested in understanding from you, like, what other IPs or publishers would be maybe on one side a dream for you to work with, or on the other side, just it makes sense for them to work with. Because for me, it makes sense because in a way, League of Legends is born out of Warcraft. But, you know, with coming out of Dota 2, you know, which is all from Dota, which is from Warcraft. But the Blizzard lore and history is just so deep and wide and long, and everything from like StarCraft 2 to World of Warcraft, you know, World of Warcraft Metal Band would be sick. You know, StarCraft 2 could you know, touch into K-pop, obviously, given its roots in esports and its origins, and there's just so much wide stuff there. But yeah, just interested to learn from you those two side of things, like dreams for you to work with or other ones that just seem to make sense, you think, that haven't touched it yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with like it's with gaming music too, like the many different IPs and, you know, the many different kind of game developers and games and stuff like that. Like there's such rich worlds. Like that's what gaming does really well, right? It's, you know, it's able to pull people into kind of this and immerse them in an IP in a way that like is super in depth, right? That many different formats can't, right? Like you can watch a movie to an extent, but you get to be a part of this IP movie, right? You get to, it may be on rails. It may not be, depending, like, is it open world? So, like I've been a big fan of like Worldcraft, like, you know, WoW music and stuff like that. Like they have great music. Like a lot of these games and IPs do, right? When you really sit back and listen, like they're highly talented composers kind of in this space. And I actually think, you know, for many here who are kind of in music production or composition as well, like, I think kind of the future talent of composers are going to come from gaming. And I say this too, because like, you know, just like we think of, you know, and celebrate kind of film composers and stuff, right? Cause it's such a great medium and you get to see it and immerse yourself in it. Game composers and whatnot, they often compose for like games that there's, you know, it's not as linear often, right? Like it can be a dynamic game. Like at this point, at this random point, when something happens, the game changes and the music needs to change with it, right? So they're often capable of composing for like more dynamic formats, and they'll probably do trailers as well. And then they probably won't even do orchestral music, right? Like our composers doing K-pop and hip-hop and metal and stuff. So they get a really cool range of experience in this. And so that's why I love this space so much. I think it's just so fun. Like I got to work across many different genres. And so as far as like the future, like, I mean, we'll really see. Like I think it's a fascinating time. That's what I'll say. I think it's a fascinating time right now. Like there's just a lot of cool stuff going on. I think a lot of people want to do music. I also think there's a lot of, you know, a big part of, you know, me and what I was trying to do at Riot was really, how can I push the experience of music specifically for our players, right? Because we were making music and things for them. And so it was like, you know, how can we make the experience more fun to an extent, right? Like, you know, that's how, you know, with KDA and how we wanted to kind of push what is entertainment in this space? What would be cool for your favorite band? Like, how do you see them live? Well, we use technology. We use, you know, whether it was holograms or AR, and, you know, and so that's where I'm interested in being, is kind of in that kind of innovation space. Like, how can we do things that aren't really done yet, right? How can we do special, unique, and impactful things? That's where my interest lies. And so you'll see me at a place that's aligned with that, I'll say. And so, you know, there's new technology. There's, you know, there's a lot of conversations around AI, for example, and things like that, which, you know, potentially unlocks cool things you could do, or, you know, just technology altogether. There's some cool stuff that people are doing or thinking of things. And there's creators that want different ways of expressing themselves. So yeah, man, I just think it's a really opportune time for folks. You know, I think we were talking about this, you know, the market conditions are, you know, for some people, they look at it and like, man, this is a tough time, and they're right. But I also think it's a really unique time because there's just a lot of talent out there now that's looking to change their life. They're looking for their next 10-year thing or whatever. So there's, you know, some cool people to work with and to potentially do some innovative things together.
Hey, if anyone wants to come up and ask a question, you just got to raise your hand in here. We've got some time for a couple because we haven't got too long left when we're talking. But I guess just trying to think of how to frame my question, Tom. But it's like, you know, part of my question was like, okay, what's the dream for you to work with next? And then for you, it's more like you said at the start, it's more like a philosophical question at the moment. It's not like, yeah, Chris, I'd love to work specifically with World of Warcraft, or I'd love to like go launch an Assassin's Creed music line. It's more like, no, I'm just looking at, you know, where I want to put my learnings of the last 10 years next and how I can apply it, maybe even in a completely different way to the industry.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the thing. So there's a lot of it. Yeah. I think there's a lot of things kind of that are out there. There's a lot of people that want to do stuff, and I don't know. I'm kind of excited. I mean, I'm really taking, like I said, I was, you know, took a month, went to New Zealand, got to reflect a lot over there, which was great. And highly recommend, by the way, for anybody, like if you haven't been to New Zealand, like I know it sounds like people say it's a bucket list place, but it definitely is. It's just, there's nowhere else than like in Australia, of course, too. I know you've, you know, yourself, but like, yeah, people should definitely go places, see things. And this was my time to do that. And then what comes next, like that'll, you know, that'll happen very soon. But yeah, I'm excited. I don't know. I'm just like, yeah, man. I'm excited. I keep saying it.
Man, New Zealand's magical. Like the fog covered rolling hills and that kind of stuff. Like I remember when I went there for the first time, I was like, this is insane. It's just funny for us in Australia too, because people forget how big Australia is. It's like usually cheaper and quicker for us to fly to New Zealand than it is to the other side of Australia. Like I live on the East Coast, the West Coast. Oh. Perth is like 3.5 hour flight away, and Auckland's like a 3 hour flight. So.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Australia's huge. That's right.
Yeah, huge and nothing in the middle. Basically, we all basically live in this thin strip on the East Coast. I had when I worked at Corsair, the PR director there, Harry, a British guy, Pom, he was so funny. I remember him saying, he's like, why are houses and land so expensive in Australia? Just go live somewhere else. Like everyone's fighting to live in this thin strip on the East Coast, yet there's like this entire swath of land that's just like completely desolate. Like, you know, when you have a here's a story for you about how big it is. My dad grew up 1,000 kilometers inland in this place called Longreach, which is where Qantas first ever took off from. It was a B-17 base in World War II. And you know the old GPSs that would often say, like, you know, I guess in American terms, it'd say like, you know, drive 3 miles and then turn right at the roundabout or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. I remember we were driving out there once. I went with him to drive out to Longreach. And the GPS said something like, you know, continue straight for 392 kilometers. Oh, and you're like, damn, there's not much to do. I think it's a bit of an overstatement. It's probably more like 200, but it's just so wild when you get out there because you, like, as far as the eye can see, you just can't see anything except fences and power poles. Like there's barely any trees out there. Like you're essentially in the desert and you're like, this is insane, man. There's just some kangaroos around, there's shrubbery, and there's just blue skies and it's hot. It's hot as hell. It's like 110 degrees Fahrenheit. You can't walk outside without shoes on. You'll burn your feet on. You'll actually burn your feet on the road.
Oh,
on
crazy.
The
ground.
Like the tar starts to bubble and melt sometimes in summer. Wow. Like it's just wild out there, man. It's like you can see why. I mean, you can see why people don't want to live there, especially, you know, my dad lived there pre-air conditioning. That would be hell.
I can't imagine. Can't imagine that.
It's just a different world. And there's another, I mean, I'm waffling on a bit now, but there's another crazy thing where it's like there's some scientific reaction that happens that when water dries, it goes cold, like it cools down a lot when it's evaporating. And remember, it just poured down with rain for about 15 minutes. All the roads flooded. There's no like roadside drainage and stuff there. They're all just like flat roads and a lot of dirt roads and stuff like that. And then, you know, so basically just flooded, flash flooding around. And then within an hour, it looks like it never rained ever.
Crazy.
Yeah, and that cooling off thing, like I remember we're sitting in like the spa at this hotel thing we're staying at. You get out and you start shivering because the water evaporates so quickly that it just starts like super cooling you down. And I remember Dad telling me, like when he was in high school, they used to have like water balloon, water bomb, whatever you call them, fights at lunchtime. And they'd walk back in to class and they'd be dry by the time they sit down at their desk.
It's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just extreme. A completely new world.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I mean, some of my family members were talking about that while we were in New Zealand, and they were saying that in Australia, everything there is trying to kill you. And in New Zealand, there's like nothing to kill you. It's just like, I think it was something where there's like no real, there's not a whole lot of like natural just predators and things like that there. And whatnot until they got and they got some rodents or something like that in New Zealand. That's been like the thing that's kind of starting to wipe out parts of the ecosystem because there's nothing to eat them.
So. Damn, really? Yeah, I can't even think about it. The only thing with New Zealand's obviously natural disasters, like with their earthquakes, obviously bad earthquakes in Christchurch in the past and stuff. I went there not too long after those. Yeah, and it was insane, man. It was like, I think I went there like 3 or 4 years after those earthquakes and the whole mall was set up like a shipping container mall. And I remember going to the museum and stuff and you have to, there's like just massive areas of the city that were still cordoned off and it looked like a zombie apocalypse movie. Like you're going past all these high fences with barbed wire and just all these buildings and like cars parked there and just nothing in those streets at all. It's like a, you know, 28 weeks later kind of thing. You're just like, this is eerie as hell. And they were just, you know, they were still trying to figure out like what to do with these buildings and stuff. It was when drones were brand new and they were like flying drones inside buildings. You can't just walk someone in there and be like, is this going to collapse on me? Let's find out. So they're like trying to find ways to salvage things. And, you know, obviously one of the things I didn't think about too with the earthquakes and them saying is like the, you know, all the water pipes and stuff will get destroyed as well under. And that's what I guess people don't think about too. They think about the buildings on top, but what about like all the sewage, the drainage, like, you know, water, any power that's underground, things like that too. Wild, man. But no, you're definitely right. I think, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Australia trying to kill you. Everything from the birds, like the magpies. I was feeding some magpies some fries the other day, actually. They're up in my face to the stingrays, Rip Steve Irwin, to snakes. There's a lot. You get used to it. Really? It's just the spiders are the worst, man. Like where I grew up down in Tasmania, it's like a little island state and it's quite cold. It's very similar to New Zealand, but more like rugged and not as like open area. It's much more dense and compact. And there's like two snakes, I think, in Tasmania. And I did Air Force Care. I did a bunch of survival courses, you know, like living off army ration packs, like sleeping in a, you know, a grass shelter you make yourself kind of thing. And I never saw a snake once ever. And there's some creepy crawlies, but it's just like centipedes and millipedes and stuff. But when I came up here, moved to Melbourne, man, there's just spiders everywhere. We get a lot of white tails. I've seen a lot of redbacks before and things like that too. Wow. So I've been bitten by white tail before too, but not a lot of them will necessarily kill you, but like a white tail will hurt. It blew my foot up like a balloon. I couldn't walk for like 3 or 4 days. Really?
Wow.
I was playing games, man. I remember I was playing Counter-Strike Source trying to be a pro and I reached down to scratch my foot and I was like, man, my foot really hurts. And I looked down and I was like, what the hell is going on? Foot's like the size of a balloon in the hospital. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. I'm okay on spiders. Like I like, I'm cool with reptiles and many insects and things, but spiders, arachnids, for some reason, they give me like the heebie-jeebies. I'm okay.
Damn. Well, man, our time's almost up. As always, awesome chatting with you. And I can't wait to catch up in person.
Thanks for having me, jump on. Yeah.
No worries, man.
This is cool.
You know, a question I want to ask you, and this is for the benefit of those listening now or later on YouTube or on the podcast feed, is, you know, obviously we're business-to-business related platform on LinkedIn talking here and most of the work that I do. What do you want to see if someone reaches out to you? And I know it's a very generalistic question, but if someone wants to say, shit, I really want to learn from Ty, I really want to talk to him, how should they reach out to you on LinkedIn? What kind of message is going to grab your attention? What kind of things do you want to talk about?
I mean, I'm pretty open to many different kind of topics, so to speak. And I think that's the main thing, like for me, is reaching out with kind of like what you want to talk about, quite frankly. I get many reach outs, but it's just like, kind of empty reach outs. Just, hey, let's connect. Let's, you know, and I don't know what that means really. Right? Like, why should we connect? Right. Versus, I actually love talking. I mean, I love talking. I'm pretty quiet as a person, but like when it comes to like certain topics of interest and things like that, I actually love digging in that. And I think that's just how we grow. And so if you want to reach out, like, quite frankly, it's like, reach out to me directly and let me know like what you want to talk about. What do you want to learn about? I'm kind of an open book. Like, I love to share my experience. I love to, cause I probably learn from others as well, even though they may think they're not as experienced. You'd be surprised. Everybody comes from like a somewhat unique background. So, feel free to, I think, hit me up directly, but just let me know. Let me know what you want to talk about.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right. Like that you need to, I try to tell people like when they're messaging me, don't make me do the thinking. That's the easiest way, exactly, I think, not to get a reply. It's like, hey, let's connect, or I want to get a job in esports. What should I do? It's like, well, to be frank, I have no idea who you are. Like, I don't know what kind of job you want, or, you know, I don't know what your aspirations are. I don't know where you want to work or what kind of salary you need to earn. You know what I mean? And then it's up to me to ask the questions, to do the research. Like if you can go to a more senior person, and you can be very specific with what you want, what you need, ask, you know, a leading question and give them something to do, then you can kind of go from there. You know, I always try to be prepared when talking to people and, you know, just don't waste anybody's time, essentially. And then, you find once you become friends and closer or you build that respect, then it can be like, you know, our last call, which was booked for 45 minutes. We talked for an hour and a half and just, you know, we start waffling on before we both look at the time and go, oh shit, we got to do stuff. But, you know, I think at the beginning, it's just that. And, you know, don't be too scared to just reach out to someone, because I have that imposter syndrome all the time where I'm like, how the fuck am I talking to Toa Dunn, you know, who's done a billion plus views and he made, you know, in a way he made KDA, which is just insane. And he made like Imagine Dragons and an AR dragon flying into League of Legends. Like, it's just ridiculous. Or like Jeff Pabst, who's done $100 million in sales or that kind of stuff. Yeah. Or Clinton Sparks, who's, you know, he's like indirectly but quite responsible for the song Turn Down For What. Like he told, like they showed in that song and they weren't sure about it. And he said, do this. And it revolutionized like an entire club genre for like 6 years. It was just insane. Yeah. But like I'm sitting in Clinton's lounge room being like, I don't deserve to be here. Why the fuck am I here? Just some kid from Australia. Yeah. I haven't even made my own $10 million yet. I'm sure I'll get there one day, but you know what I mean? But I think if you can just
100%,
you know, be prepared and ask questions and pique that curiosity, then you can just have a talk about stuff and see where it goes from there. But you know, I said it twice, but I'll say it again. It's just like, come to them with a purpose, like something specific you want to talk about. It's not just, hey, let's catch up for a 15-minute coffee, or can I pick your brain about music or whatever. It's like, hey, Toa, I'm a customer service analyst at Blizzard. I've been a DJ just like you. You know, I really think Blizzard should launch a bluegrass song. You know, here's a sample I made. You know, what do you think? Give me some feedback, like, you know, something direct for you to do. It's a very specific example, but hey, there might be someone out there who wants to do exactly that.
Exactly. Never know. Yeah. I'm open to those discussions. I love those. So
if anyone wants to follow you online or connect with you or chat with you, where's the best place, man? You're obviously on LinkedIn. You on any other platforms too?
I mean, I'm on Twitter. So Twitter and LinkedIn are probably my most active. Instagram, I kind of peruse, but I don't spend a lot of time on Instagram personally. I'm actually not on social media a lot, but a lot of value here in LinkedIn, like it's meeting peers and potential people to work with and stuff like that. And Twitter's kind of the same thing. It's Twitter for me for the past was like a cool way to engage with players directly. And so I'm kind of there a bit and whatnot. So yeah, I'd say Twitter and LinkedIn are the best.
Yeah, fantastic, man. And yeah, for anyone wondering, it's just TOADUNN. That's the Twitter, and that's also how you spell the name if you're just listening to audio and you're wondering how the hell is that spelled? Now you know. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on today, man. As always, an awesome conversation. Can't wait to catch up with you again online and in person later this year.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it, man. Always great chatting with you, man.
Yeah, and thanks everyone for listening in. For those people who are listening, soon to be announced, but starting to be confirmed behind the scenes, I'm going to be hosting a senior industry event in LA around June, around E3 time, which is somewhere in the tens. So essentially be a closed door 60 to 80 tickets, only senior people in the industry to do some panels and some roundtables together. So we're going to be doing some panels about brands who are spending, investors who are spending, and then a few roundtables. I want to be able to get senior people together in a non-recorded format to sit around a table together and talk about issues in the industry and see what they can do to fix it, whether it's getting more money from brands or how to work better with influencers or, you know, maybe how to make music at your own game publisher, for example. And then for those people who are listening who say, well, that sucks because I'm not senior, I might be able to get in, we've also got a junior event that we're planning as well, which we're hoping Toa will be a part of and some other senior people as well. So what we're really wanting to do with that is create a way for junior people to meet senior people in person to network in LA. Probably going to be a free event or at least very low tickets somewhere around either Hollywood or downtown LA, once again around E3 time. And there's going to be a star-studded cast of people there who you can come up to and just ask some advice directly. I think we'll have some one-on-one times booked and then maybe we'll have a couple of beers and you can just go and talk to some people. So, you know, the caliber of people that will be there, you know, people like me, people like Toa, maybe someone like Clinton Sparks, who you mentioned before, or, you know, Jeff Pabst, who's done $100 million worth in sales, Phil Ranzer, who was the first head of Facebook Gaming Creators, who was on my podcast last week, is interested in coming along as well. So, you know, if you want to find a way to kind of break into the industry or level up, hopefully that's a way for you to come along and chat to some people that you might usually get a chance to talk to, especially face-to-face, shake their hand and get some advice. So I've talked for long enough. Thanks once again, Toa. Thanks, everyone, for coming and listening. And bye for now.
Awesome. Thanks. Yep.